ladies and gentlemen. My name is Jared, and with me is the prince I would die for, Ian.
That's me.
We are honored and grateful that you have joined us here at our table. Today, we are at the feature table, where we will be looking at Zombie Princess. Designed by Ted Ausbach. Artwork created by Alfredo... I can do this. Caceres. And published by Bezier Games.
Zombie Princess is a 2-6 player trick-taking zombie fighting card avoiding princess using card game where players are attempting to match their bids accordingly with their teammates of either 1 or 0 players. And then you are trying to fight off the zombies in this wonderful and delightful violent game of card playing. Join us today as we review Zombie Princess.
No, Arnold's not allowed back for this episode. That was on the last zombie episode. Ian, my question for you today is very simple. Are you a hardcore spades player? Or do you not even know what I'm talking about?
I'm so hardcore. Yeah. Hardcore parkour.
Wow.
Hardcore parkour zombie princess.
No. Did you play a lot of spades growing up?
No.
Ugh.
I played a couple games here or there. No, we didn't play very much spades. Yeah, we played some other games. Yeah, some hearts occasionally, but yeah, spades didn't.
You guys played hearts instead of spades?
No, I played hearts with friends occasionally that they were playing hearts. I didn't choose. I did not choose. I was usually in the circumstances in which I did play, I was kind of roped into it because the game was already happening.
I see. So you didn't. Yeah. You were a follower. I got it.
Yes. Hardcore parkour.
No. Well, I was a huge spades player growing up. I loved playing spades. We played it in high school all the time. It was our way of making it through AP history when my history teacher didn't want to teach half the time. Good times, good. Everybody. You love the public school system here in the South. And anyways, so that's what we would do. And we would play all the time. I loved working with the same partner, really understanding how each other plays. People that listen to the pod know that I am a sucker for a good team game. And this one in the team game variant, well, not variant. Is it a variant, Ian, if you have multiple modes of play or is it just modes of play?
I don't know.
Oh, come on, man.
I would say the variant in this game would be the solo, the individual teams.
All right.
That's how you, I would play.
I agree with you. The main game is the team game. So,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, this game is designed to be played in teams.
100%. But we'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah. So I'd say, I don't know. It's not a variant. That part's not a variant.
Perfect. This has been great. Okay, so you're like 0-2 on questions. Let's try one more time. If you were in a zombie apocalypse, where would you want to start?
We really want to start, like, in which location?
Like, where are you when you find out? And it's, like, the most optimal, like, give yourself, and realistic, like, you would never find yourself in a bunker in, like, underneath the White House or something like that. I'm saying, like, realistically for you, where could you end up that's like, all right, I have a chance?
So, like, a weapons depot I'm not normally in, so therefore I can't choose.
Yeah, you can't just be like, oh, well, I'm really into massive military-grade weapons now.
I would hope to find myself at, like, an Academy Sports or, like, some type of sports store. Because I do go there. Or like maybe like a Home Depot.
A Home Depot.
where at least I can get a chainsaw or something. You know, somewhere I could find a weapon of some kind and maybe be able to survive.
Okay. Very good.
How about you?
You know, I'm learning that my father-in-law has several guns in the house, so I'm at home, then I also know where my family is, so
there you go.
I kind of feel like that's the starting point. And I have tools in my garage, so
home would be the third option,
I guess. The third option behind Academy Sports and Home Depot.
I mean, I have weapons at home, so like I would be served, like I would be fine, but you know,
Academy Sports, we are awaiting your sponsorship.
Yeah.
All right, Ian, tell us how to play this blessed game.
All right, well, yeah, let's get started after that madness. Well, this game is not played at Home Depot or Academy Sports, but players will become the princesses of Yonder, and you are either given... either somebody like Rapunzel or Sleeping Beauty or the Ice Princess, or there's plenty more of princesses that you will become and be for the entirety of a game, which consists of four rounds. Like I said, this game is a trick-taking game, and so you will play it very much like the Game of Spades. Everybody will be given one of these princesses, and then you'll deal out the cards. Depending on how many players you have, there's four suits, but you will play with a specific number of those. Let's say we're playing a six-player game, though. You will have 15 of each suit, and one of those suits, which is the red suit, which is the prince suit, is the trump suit. And for the sake of this trick-taking game. So you will deal out all the cards, and then you will play through the round. One player will lead, they'll play one suit, everybody has to follow suit until they can't no longer, and they can either choose to play out of suit or play one of the prince trump cards. And that way, if they do, whoever plays the highest of the trump cards then would win the trick. Alternatively, like any other round, if just the highest card wins the trick. That's the basic game. You continue to play on until all the tricks are won, and that's how the gameplay works. Now, the tricky part in this trick-taking game is that there is a lot of variability when it comes to the beginning of the round. So, like I said, you're trying to meet your bid, and so before the round begins, you will go around the table clockwise, starting with the start or the first player or the leading player, and they decide how many tricks they think they might win. And so you get to take these little coins and you put them in front of you to kind of show how many tricks you think you're going to win. Now, each player will do this on their own, but once the entire table has done it, you kind of work with your teammate on how many tricks you think you're also going to win as a team. So let's say I pick two, Jared's on my team, we go around the table, it's his turn, he picks two. Combined, cumulatively, we are looking for four tricks total for our team to win. Now, I, in the perfect scenario, I would want to win two and him win two. But when it comes to meeting our bid, if Jared wins all four, then we have met our bid. Now, like I said, there's these princess powers. Some of them require you to meet your bid in particular. And so that's why that matters for those game purposes. Let's say I have a princess power that says, you know, if you meet your bid exactly, you're going to gain something else, which are skulls, which I'll get to. But that's some of the interactions that you can have with the princesses that do require you to meet your individual bid specifically. Now, on top of the princess powers adding a lot of different variability, you also have round cards. Round cards will trigger at the start of the round after you've kind of dealt out all the cards, and they add these funky variables on how the game plays. Most of the time, you trade cards with your opponent. If you're an individual game or in a team game, you trade it with your teammate. So let's say I'm given five cards to my teammate, then they get five cards back. They also do crazy things such as, you know, you only play with two cards in your hand at all times. Even though you have a whole hand of cards, you set that aside and you only play with two of them. Or the winner of each trick does something else, or you at the end of all the tricks, you get to count up how many green cards you have, and that's how many points you score. Random, just super funky, cool, but funky game-altering abilities that happen with these round cards that kind of change the way you kind of think about playing the game. Now, On top of all this, you'll also be scoring skulls, the skulls of the dead zombies. On top of the points that you score from collecting your bid appropriately or winning your bids appropriately, then you also gain skulls. Skulls are actually only worth half points, though. So for every two, it's only worth a point. But it's another way to score points. You usually gain skulls by using princess powers or meeting round card like goals. Like I said, some of these goal cards also give you points, like skulls at the end of the round if you did something, you know, that the game wanted you to. Like one of them is collecting villager cards, which are just the yellow cards. Like if you collect for every villager card you have, you gain that many skulls or something like that. Those are oftentimes what those cards do. And this is another way to gain skulls. Like I said, you'll play four rounds through. The first three rounds are pretty similar. You're using those very similar round cards along with gaining these abilities. You're adding the scores up as you go. And you don't score the skulls, though, until the very end of the game. The coins you do. But in the last round of the game, it's an even crazier round card, which are often controversial in their presence of the table. But you will... They oftentimes completely change the way the last round works, oftentimes penalizing the leader of the game and kind of incentivizing a little bit for the player in last place or the other players or the other teams or players that are behind the leader. You'll play through that round and then you add up all of your coins, all of your skulls that you've scored, and whoever has the most points or whoever team has the most points at the end of all of that will be crowned the greatest princess of the zombie killing princesses. Ta-da.
Ta-da. Dude, I actually
figured it out. Over to the zombie princess table.
Dude, I actually figured out what would actually have been a really good question. I feel so dumb.
He botched it.
I did. I completely botched it. Which Disney princess are you picking to help you survive the zombie apocalypse?
Yeah, that's a good question.
That's so on brand with what we're... Dude, I'm such an amateur.
I mean, will we... you could just add it at the end and then put it into the front.
No, we can't edit. This is real life, Ian. We're going to do it right now. Which princess are you taking?
Man, that's a hard one.
Not me. I got it.
Well, go ahead. Hold on. Let me think about that one.
You sure? Because you can't take mine if you want.
No,
to.
I won't. No, I don't want to take yours. Go ahead. No, you've already got one. You tell me.
I think the answer is Elsa. Elsa is far and away the most powerful Disney princess out there. I mean, she has literal ice powers that she could like destroy zombies with anything. So
that is pretty good.
I'm taking Elsa.
Man. Dang.
He's stumped.
This is a hard one. I feel like... yeah, she's good. No, that's a good choice.
Thank you.
I feel like... it has to be... I want to make sure I'm not missing a Disney princess.
You take your time, okay? This was a great question. It deserves a great answer. All you listeners out there, I want to hear an answer from everybody. This is gold.
Oh, I forgot she was one. Yeah, I still think this is a better choice, though. Oh, well, that's a good one, too. There's actually a couple good ones, Jared.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you for letting me know.
I think Mulan, though. Mulan would be...
Ooh,
yeah,
that's
that
a good one.
That one would be the good one. But there are some other good ones as well.
Do you have an honorable mention?
Oh, man. Well, there's Raya, but I'm not very familiar with her. Yeah.
I hated that movie. That movie could have been so good, and it sucked.
I mean, there's Brave. Is it Merida?
Merida.
From Brave. Yeah. She would be a good second.
I'm not opposed.
Yeah, the others are kind of like, I don't know. It's hard to know. I feel like none of them else. Those are the only ones that. Yeah. Maybe like Rapunzel or something.
No. Rapunzel, like new Rapunzel?
Like the tangled Rapunzel.
The one that no longer even has healing hair, so.
Oh, well, I mean, no, we gotta have the healing.
I mean, I get the healing thing. Like that, that could be a game changer.
Yeah, we gotta have the healing hair. But anyway. But no, I'm gonna stick with my, yeah, definitely number one. Mulan.
I like Mulan. That's not a bad play. I mean, I think Elsa 100% is better, but it's fine.
Sure. Yeah, it's fine.
All right. Ian. I want to tell you that when they announced that Zombie Princess was going to be a thing, I was very excited because I love the idea of Rebel Princess, the theme of it, but I don't like hearts. I think hearts is very much whatever. And while they did some things to improve hearts with Rebel Princess, I didn't feel like it was enough. I was still like, it's still hearts. But this idea, I was totally on board with. And when we first got to see it, I was totally on board. Like every team game that we played, it just shined. Playing all the different kinds of princesses, I had fun with all the different ones. You can tell me if you feel differently, because I kind of want to start here. Have you had a bad experience with one of the princesses? Because I feel like I've had lots of princesses, and I've really enjoyed the ways that they play differently.
So the one that I have found like not useful is the Red Riding Hood, which is at the start of your turn, you may trade one card from your hand with a card that's not a prince in the trick you've previously won. And I just don't find that being used regularly. Because you can't get a prince back, which would be, I think, much stronger. So really, you're trying to get... I could see that you would want to get rid of a high card. Like, you're maybe trying not to meet your bid. Sure. Or trying to meet bid zero or something, because you can always bid zero and get extra skulls. I feel like that would be a reasonable way to use this, but I have a hard time. I've had this ability multiple times, and like I've gone entire games without using it one time, because you win one trick or whatever, you win the tricks you need, and you're like, well, I don't care anymore. Like I've already set my hand. If you play your hand right, you don't need this card. Like
But I mean, I don't know. I hear that, and at the same time, like I feel like there is some flexibility to it. Because there's sometimes like you're counting on a card to be a trick and it flops, because somebody is just out of suit on turn one. So I can see situations like that where it's helpful. But the fact that you can't pull a prince doesn't make it difficult.
Yeah, I think overall I don't like the abilities that require you to win a suit or win a trick to do something as much. Like, if it's dependent on you to win a trick to then do something else after that. Like,
no,
there's abilities where, you know, you can basically cancel out a trick that you've won, which is Dorothy. And so she can drop a house on it and basically cancel out a trick. Great. Fantastic. But for me to win a trick and then swap cards, then try and do something after that or win another trick later, and I don't particularly like that. And so I don't always like those. I like a lot of the other abilities. That's just a personal thing. The way I play, potentially, I like plenty of the other abilities that fit very well and I've done really well with, and I have a lot more fun than trying to think about winning a trick that has a card in it that I want. I don't want to deal with that. So that's the one that I just particularly have not enjoyed at all. I haven't had a good experience with that one at all. The rest of them I have, though. All the other games that I played, they've been very fun, and I've worked around my ability and used it effectively. That's the one where it just doesn't feel like it's hitting.
So do you have so that was Red Riding Hood that you don't like. Do you have a favorite princess in this bunch? Because I know I do.
As far as like a favorite one to play with, because it's like always great, is the Cinderella, because she doesn't have to follow the prince suit. Yep. I love being able to sit there and be like, you know what? No, I'm not playing. I'm not playing.
Not
you
feeling
let in
it.
Prince. Yeah, I'm not playing. I'll just play this instead. It's fantastic because it gives you so much control. Like, you have so much control over the board when you play. Like, I have felt, I have no worries about what anybody else is going to do, because if I have my, like, three red trump cards, I know when I'm going to play them, and nobody's going to force me to play them. And so that's why I love playing her. It's just the flexibility is awesome. But is it the Goldilocks that you...
Goldilocks is great, dude.
Yeah, if you meet your bid exactly, you get extra skulls. So that one's like the more fun, like crazy cool stuff to do, where I feel like Cinderella is like just the great, just here, just play open and you don't have to worry about anything. It's great.
Yeah. Mm. So Cinderella is awesome because it like breaks that spade strategy of once your trumps are broken, you can then fish everybody else's trumps out by leading with one, and Cinderella protects you from that. But Goldilocks, like, it makes going nil so much more fun, because going nil, normally you get five skulls, which gives you 2.5 points, which fine, whatever. But with Goldilocks, if you're going nil and you make it, now you're getting 8 skulls, which is 4 points around.
That's
which
crazy.
Is basically what everybody else is like topping out at, unless their hand's just insane. So I just think it's super fun. And it's one of those where, like, I've always been an aggressive spades player. That's how I like to play. And so even if I've got a hand that has some cards that could become a problem, I like going nil just to get those extra points when I can. So by far my favorite princess.
Yeah, that one's really good. There's a lot of very good ones. Even though, like, that one is very strong and you could score a lot of points, like, there are... You know, your teammates still have to play their hand.
Yep.
You know, you can't, it's hard to not, you know, if you have specific cards, sometimes it's difficult not to win the tricks. So there are ways to force the hand of that player. And overall, I think most of them are fairly well balanced. I think some get the ability used more often than others. But like I said, that Dorothy one where you basically drop a house on a trick and cancel it is like, oh, yeah, that's a great ability. And sometimes it just doesn't get used, though, because you don't always want to cancel the trick that you're winning. And so especially if it's hard to come by in that round and you win your final trick, you can't drop the house on it to cancel the trick. You have to be very intentional. So sometimes some of the abilities just don't get used as often, where, you know, some do. And I think that's where the balancing comes in, and you get a lot of balancing things going on there, which I think is very cool because, like you said, the Goldilocks is great because if you meet your bid exactly, but if somebody screws you over and you win a trick and you don't meet your bid, then you get completely wrecked. You also didn't gain extra skulls, and if you bid null, then you really lose out. So, like, huge... huge ramifications for playing that way, and if you get screwed over by, you know, the game or somebody plays you well, so.
It's true. But, I mean, even when you go for broke, like, the game's pretty quick, right? I mean, I think we get through even a 6-player game, we get through, like, 40 minute stops.
Yeah, I mean, by the time, yeah, with everything and setup and all that, I mean, maybe an hour with everything, but, yeah, no, it's a fairly quick game, especially when people know what they're doing. And again, it's a trick-taking game that you're just throwing cards around. And actually, you know, when you're getting through the round cards and all of those things, like, yeah, you know, that adds a pinch of time. But overall, you're not adding a significant amount of time to those games because of that. So I think it's a great, as far as the time period, yeah, you play only 4 rounds and the rounds feel super quick.
Well, and so that's the rounds, right? That's one of the main things that kind of deviates from traditional spades besides the player powers, where you've got these crazy effects and the card passing between either teammates or opponents if you're playing solo, or, yeah, not solo, but individuals. Mm-hmm. I, for the most part, I do like these. I like the change it up. Like, let's have to make a different strategy instead of playing the same hand over and over again. There are a few that like really change the game. I think we played one in our last game where you got to pick only two cards out of your hand and you had to play with those two cards on a given turn. I mean, you picked one or the other depending on if you had to follow suit or not. And I mean, it was fascinating, but I was also like, this isn't, and I know it's not spades, but I was like, this isn't spades anymore. Like, this is a completely different chaotic mess. But that then goes away after one round. So it's not that, like, that crazy.
Yeah. No, that's what I like about that aspect is, like, usually with, there's, like, 25 different round cards. Some of them are more annoying in that regard than others, and that's why there's so many of them. But oftentimes, what I have found is if I have completely randomized those cards, like fully just shuffled them and draw three, one will be like that, where it's like, okay, this is not like spades at all. And then the next round is a little bit simpler, and it doesn't, it's like add something at the very end, or, you know. And so I think that variability in the round cards is obviously intentional, but it also gives plenty of flexibility between round and round in that it just adds a nice little twist to the different ones. And I think those are really cool to kind of walk through as you're playing all the different game, you know, rounds and games. I think it's very cool to kind of see all of the different options that pop out. Do you recall any of your favorite round cards that you've seen or any memorable experience that you've seen?
I mean, the two cards it was very different. Like, I feel like most of them, it was very much like, okay, that's cool. But it really didn't gravitate too much away from the base concept of the game. It just kind of, like, I think at one of them was like, it changed the way yellows worked or something like that. Or little simple stuff like that, and it wasn't too crazy. But then here we go. I've got a few of them here.
The villagers are wild, which is the yellow card.
That's what being, yeah, the wild.
The yellow cards being wild is crazy. It's basically you're playing with like two of every color. Basically, is
yeah.
Very interesting game that we played. And what ended up happening is you know you have multiple like 15s laying around the board like all at once. You're like, oh well, wait, I just counted I thought that was the 15.
No, 15? That's the other. No. Yeah,
so yeah, that was difficult to start card counting what's been played.
Right, for sure. Yeah, that was cool. I'm trying to think what else, but I don't know, man. That was the first, like I said, that one where you only pick up two cards and you kind of have to choose. It was the one that really kind of shook me in, oh, I've got like truly change up my strategy for how I would want to go about this. So that was really interesting. Let me see if I can pick one more here.
And I think one of the ones that, one of my favorite ones that doesn't add like too much, but adds like a ton of variety is, it's basically whoever wins the last trick gives it to the player on their left.
Yeah.
That one, it's like, it doesn't do anything for the whole round, but in the last round, it could completely wreck somebody.
Everything.
Or like actually help them. It's so random, but adds such variety to the ending. I think that's enough to, it's like, it could definitely screw somebody over, but I just think it's just a pinch of variety that can be controlled in some ways, you know?
Yeah. So here's one that I thought was really cool. So not only you have to give half of your hand to your teammate as the exchange, and then you have to decide half of your hand to be placed face down that you don't play until after the first half is done. So you're playing half hand. And I like both of those concepts of like, I'm going to give you half. And I have like this love-hate relationship with the fact that you exchange cards with your partner. Because in some ways, I feel like it makes it a lot easier because you're kind of stacking how you want you and your partner to play. And you've already got kind of a strategy based off the princess that you have of what you want to do. So it almost makes it feels like you're a little bit on easy mode in spades. But at the same time, like the concept of getting to pass those cards and your opponents are too. So it's not like it's just better for you. It's a very interesting give and take that I'm not sure how I feel about.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the variety there of trading is such a, as you know, and I've taught this game a lot, and it is difficult sometimes. You're like, yeah, this game's like spades, and then you're like, oh well, we trade cards, and they're like, what? Like,
why do
like,
you do that?
What do I trade? And they're like, I don't know what to give you, and I'm like, I mean, I can give you pointers, but I can't tell you what to give me. Like,
right.
And so it is challenging for, I think, some players. You know, a lot of the options that you end up trading are low, but there are some cards that allow, you know, those are the round cards that tell you how many cards to pass.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of them are like high, like you said, half your hand or like three or four cards, where some of it is like one card or two cards. So like doesn't, yeah, I mean, you can give somebody a card, but, you know, what is it going to do for the rest of the round? Who knows?
Could change
but
everything.
Yeah, exactly. I know. Yeah. I think overall, though, that ability, like, I think for me, trading with your partner is such a fun part of the game for me. And again, I didn't play a lot of spades. So, like, that part I'm not as familiar with. I love the aspect that I can trade cards with my teammate. And one, I know what I'm putting into their hand. But also, like, they're giving me something so we can share a little bit of knowledge with each other of, like, what, and then based off what they give me, like, I can, like, if they give me all red cards, they're probably giving me all their red cards or something like that to that effect. And so, like, there's stuff you can kind of pick up through this, just literally two or three cards that you're trading. Just so much information is shared with your teammate. It allows so much team building in a way. Like, I feel like I really am playing as a team when we do stuff like that. And I think that's a really neat aspect. And one of my favorite things that ended up happening in a game is where there was a time where I was trying to not win a trick, and it ended up not working out. But basically, I was able to, one of my teammates I was able to trade cards with through in the middle of the game or whatever. And so what I ended up doing is I basically asked my teammate to play a card for me. And so they played a card for me. And I was like, oh, this is perfect. Like, so then I basically gave them a card back. And in my hopes, it was that they would wait to play that card later so that basically I could get out of the trick, because I won too many tricks already. And so I was trying to give them a high red so that they would win a trick, and then I would play my red under that, and so they would take my red, my trump suit or trump card away from me. It didn't end up working. I felt so empowered at the moment that I was like, "This is it. This is it. This is gonna work. I'm gonna trade this card away. He's gonna play it next round. Yeah, he was gonna play it next round, and then I'm gonna play my trump behind it." And then it didn't happen. But those moments, I feel honestly like more than a lot of games like this is. And that's not the first time. There have been multiple times where there are situations in which, you know, I'm playing, you know, mind games with my teammate to try and see if they're going to do something that I want them to do or that they want me to do to try and win or try and do something and manipulate the tricks in a certain way. And I'm trying to think of another instance in that which it happened, but it was very similar in that, like, I was trying to not win the trick. I think one of my teammates basically handed me a card at one point or another during the round, and I was able to get it off without attempting to win the trick because we both were at our bid correctly. And then it ended up coming back around to the table to her, and she ended up having one more trump card. And I was like, no, you, it was like so perfect. But again, all these moments in this game, I feel like I'm finding more and more, like, and I don't know, maybe it's because you have these round cards that are adding a ton of variety, but also a little bit of strategic elements, especially like some of them gain you skulls or take skulls away by overbidding or overdoing it. And then you also have your princesses, and there's just a lot of variety there on top of the actual trick taking that it feels like when you combo something so well, it's very rewarding and satisfying.
Sure.
When you pull off something as a team. And I think that's really a nice feature to this game that, you know, I didn't get from Rebel Princess.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't, I didn't feel that same satisfying feeling in Rebel Princess at all.
Sucks, bro. Yeah. Like, I'm telling you.
I just, that moment was never there in that game and a lot of other trick-taking games, to be brutally honest. Like, trick-taking games are not my bread and butter. I enjoy some of them. I have some in the collection for that reason. There's some that I've actually really enjoyed. But the moment of satisfaction that I've had in this game as working as a team and pulling off just like based off the cards that other people playing, it just felt like a mind game that I was just draining, trying to get the perfect play of my cards and my teammates' cards. And it just, when it works so well, it is just such a great feeling. And that's the game, you know, that's the feeling that we all chase in gaming. And I find it in this game a lot. And plenty of other frustration as well, because it's a trick-taking game. But when that moment happens in this, I'm truly satisfied, and I didn't find that in Rebel Princess or other games like it. This is definitely unique to that extent.
So, are there things about the game that you don't like? Because I have a couple of things I'd like to mention.
Absolutely, absolutely. Like I said, the frustration is there. In that there are a lot of some of the round cards are frustrating to try and work around. And like I said, some of the princesses I feel are significantly stronger than others. And that becomes challenging. It's also really hard to play this game with somebody that's new when the rest of the board is not. And so oftentimes I've played this game 10 plus times. 50% of the time I put myself with the new player to try and help, and the rest of the table is running circles around us. And it's not anybody's fault. It's, you know, you just have to learn some of the subtleties of the game, and I try and help my teammate in that. And it just is hard, because if somebody's experienced, they know what they want when they trade cards. They know what they want when they're using their abilities. They know what they're trying to do within the game. And sometimes that doesn't always happen for a new player when you're trying to coordinate with a teammate. And so it can be hard on a new player that's playing in a group of you know, players that have already played before. That it can be challenging for them.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. So I was really curious how this game was going to play at individuals, and I don't know, man. It just didn't work for me. Correct me if I'm wrong, but if I remember correctly, you don't play. You like have a significant stack of the deck left when you play individuals. Is that right?
Yeah. So, you know, me and you talked about that. You know, we wouldn't recommend playing like that. As individual game, we haven't played it by using the house rule that I would have come up with.
Yep, where you,
which is basically just play with all the cards. Basically, you would remove the cards to make sure that everybody gets like 10. So you normally game, you play 10 rounds. And the way the cards are always divided is you play with all the cards, but you play 10 rounds. In individual game, the math gets changed. And so there's, and so what I would do is remove the extra cards, because part of the game is the card counting. And like you're saying, in those games, it's the rule specified to just play with the specific number of cards, and you leave cards out. And I'll let you finish your point of why that was a severe frustration.
Well, it just starts to feel very random, right? Like, you already, it is a card game, and you kind of have to play your hand. And so now you're not even sure if the card that you're holding that could be good, if it is good or not, because you don't know what else is out there. Like, you could, I mean, we've saw individual games where people ran out of yellows or some other suit super quick. And it wasn't just one person, it was multiple, because there were so many still left in the unknown deck. And like, there's just too many cards that it just creates this bowl of randomness. And I really felt like that took away from what I want a trick-taking game to be. I've actually seen that happen a lot. Like, we talked about that in Origin Story, where there was just so many cards left and you just don't know, or other trick-takers as well, where there's just, like, I'm okay with a couple. Like, I like that little bit of like, you don't know about that one card that's sitting there, But I want one card. I don't want like a whole stack that I'm looking at like anything could be in there. None of us could have a trump card. Like we could have no reds, you know?
Yeah.
So that for me was very frustrating. And it was also really frustrating because one of the individual games that we did was with a player who was like, all right, I don't like trick taking games, but I trust you guys with this game because you've told me how great it is. And then it sucked. It was so bad. And I just reaffirmed like their no love for trick taking games and looked miserable the whole time. And we were all miserable too. It was a bad experience. So for me, the individual games just did not hit. They were very, very bad.
If it's similar at all, if I need to play it again with house.
I am curious about the house variant. But we haven't played it, so we can't really speak to it.
Yeah, hard to speak on that. If it is anything similar, I would say that it's completely unplayable at individuals. That was what's crazy enough is I just spouted out this great experience. And just imagine the exact opposite of everything that I said. You just used complete opposite wording on everything when it comes to individual of the experience that we had. It's just not meant to be played like that. And if it is, it's not meant to be played like that, one. But let's say you can change a little bit. I would change it with playing all the cards in a suit. Because like you mentioned, like we were sitting there and let's say I had the highest of a card for that game. Let's say it's a 12. The 12 is the highest card. Well, I'm sitting there and I'm like, well, I have a 12. I have a 12 and I can win this trick. And you play the card and then nobody has a green. You have the 12 green. You play to a 12 green thinking that you might be able to win a trick, and nope, nobody's got it. Everybody else is out of greens. It's like there weren't any more shuffled into the nobody had them.
Yeah, because why? Why would we assume that there'd be greens? That'd be stupid.
So the aspect of at least predicting a little bit about the table or hoping was completely bound to chance. And so because in the game we were playing, we were looking at like 10 cards per round, I think. An obscene amount of cards that aren't in the game that, again, it makes it a complete random chance of what each trick will be. People were winning tricks with, like, fives. It just didn't feel like anything close to the same game. And
it's just rando.
Yeah, I don't know if that was, I don't know if that's an overlook or just this is not how the game's supposed to be played. But if you want to, you can. I feel like you should definitely take out the cards, though. Just find a way to play with all of them. I would never play like that. We've talked about, like you said, we've talked about it on the podcast. I don't find it fun. Is you're already trying to predict what people are doing, and you can't. Now you have this other variable that is completely unpredictable, like whatsoever.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of this in trick taking games at all. But I mean, I knew this was a possibility because I've played enough spades. I've never played individual spades. Like, it's just not what you do. And I know this is technically not spades, but it's spades. Like, let's just call a spade a spade. And so, I don't know. It was bad. But I would be willing to try it again. No extra cards. Like, that would be okay. And all you do with that is you take out the high cards until you get to the right count. So your 15s, 14s, whatever. The other thing for me that I don't know. You are correct that I overreact and it's really not as bad as it feels, but it feels so bad in the moment. Every one of those event cards, the black chaotic one at the last round, attacks the first player every time. And I'm all for a good catch-up mechanic. I want everybody to have a good time. I'm more interested in everybody enjoying themselves at the table than winning a board game. But holy crap. When I play a flawless spades game and I'm like 10 points ahead and you're telling me you're about to try and cripple me because this other pair has sucked. No, I refuse to accept that as I hate it. I make them chaotic in different ways. Like I want a threat that I'm going to flip over the one that penalizes the lead player. But all of them? Come on.
I'm pretty sure you actually might be right on that. It might be all of them. I don't know.
I mean, We've played a lot, and every single one that we've come across, I mean, we could just sift through the deck, I guess, but everyone I've come across in gameplay has been like, oh, you've been doing good all game? Here, let me penalize you.
Yeah, the only one, there's one that after everybody passes their cards, each team except for the team in the lead gets to look at the hand of their player on the right. So, yeah, like, it doesn't, like, it penalizes you a little bit, but everybody else gets to see everybody else's
hands. But there's some where it's like you lose all your skulls if you don't make your bid, and that's just as the lead player. Like, it's not everybody. Or it's one where, like, you can't play red cards, or you have to pay a skull every time you play a red card, you know, whatever. And it's just like, dude, I know it's only half a point, but, like, what? I'm getting screwed, and the second place team might be like right on my heels, and that's how you want me to play?
I mean, I know the one you hate is if the lead team doesn't meet their bid exactly, they lose all their skulls.
Yeah,
and
so, that sucks.
that's devastating for a player that likes to just go nil entire game. So, yeah,
I'm sorry that I've just played so much better than you have, and
you can't play perfect for three rounds. It's got to be all four, baby. You got to do them all. You can't go halfway. If you can be perfect for three, you can be perfect for four.
Oh yeah, that's a way of looking at it, I guess. I don't know, man. It irks me. It irks my soul to have that crap going on. But whatever.
It is no that one. I avoid that one in particular where the lead has to match their bid, because that's pretty aggressive, especially for skulls. Some teams could be going for skulls for most of the game and not really scoring many points.
Can you imagine if you got that while you're playing Goldilocks and you've been going nil this whole time? Come on.
Yeah.
And then your partner screws it up because they can't meet their two bid.
Yeah, that's rough. Yeah, that's not good. And so that's the one thing. Yeah, I personally take that one out because that one's very aggressive. But if you're into that type of chaos, absolutely play with this. I think you'll have an absolute blast because somebody's going to get mad. I don't personally like to make the table that mad. But it is interesting. You know, I think what it will do though. And here's the way I look at that, you know, a card like that too, is to kind of counter argue with what you're saying, though, is that I think there's a way, like, that card forces the leader to be very, very, very passive in the last round. And so, and I mean passive in that, like, they bid like one or two, if they, depending on how the hand they have, and be very, very passive and just, you know, not try and overwin. And I think what the card is really meant to do is so that if you have the lead, you know, you don't get bid four or five to try and really push your lead further. It really sets you in like, oh, yeah, I'm going to win one or two and I'm going to call it quits. And so it's interesting.
But Ian, like, the whole point of this game is that you play your hand. Like, if I'm in the lead and in the last round I get dealt four 15s and like this stack of reds, like, what am I supposed to do but play my hand?
Well, yeah, but what I'm saying is you're going to bid more in a conservative sense than not. So that's just a...
I hear what you're saying. I give that
he
part
doesn't
a
like
big
it.
Old...
He doesn't like it. He doesn't like it.
Yeah, I'm out.
Again, I don't usually play with that one. I leave that one out. There's some other good ones.
As an aggressive spades player, I don't really understand what you're saying anyway. It's like this is like the idea of just playing chill is
Yeah, you're
not...
like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, bro? You go all in, bro.
No, that's fair. No, those are all fair points.
All right. I think the only thing we really didn't talk about is the game has other ways of inviting chaos. So instead of having those different round effects take place for just one round, there is a variant where you can have them be in effect for the entire game.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And it's really chaotic. So again, if you're into that sort of thing, then you'll find the chaos here. I'll wrap with it. We'll wrap with this question and then kind of go into our final thoughts. Ian, I know you mentioned that trick taking is not really your bread and butter, but you do have a few. Would you say where does this land for you on trick taking games?
Like as far as ones I enjoy?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
I think this is by far my favorite trick-taking game, yeah. I don't really have any that I would put above it for what this provides. Adds a little bit of chaos. I mean, I have tried this game with between 6 to 8 new people and taught them, and we sat and played through a whole game. I'm in particular thinking between, 6 to 8 people that I showed this game to. And they've all come to me later and said, dude, I love that game so much. Literally yesterday at church, somebody was like, dude, you remember, what was that zombie friend? It's such a good game, man. I've been thinking about that one. I was like, yeah, dude, it's good. So it's leaving memories at the table.
It's
easy to teach. Oftentimes a lot of those players had played spades before, and I'm like, perfect. You played spades. This is like spades, but then nothing like it. Just the base game is like spades, and then we're going to turn all of the rules up on its head. And so I think it's been easy to teach as far as that regard goes. But the depth there, I think it's really kind of captivating people of like, wow, that's really neat. And a really cool, different new card game that feels unique. And that doesn't happen in other trick-taking games that I've played with people that have played trick-taking games or that have played Hearts and Spades. I try it and they're like, oh yeah, that's cool. But they haven't like come to me at some third-party event and said, hey, remember that zombie game? Like, so
it's true.
This is definitely, it grabs the attention in a different way. And has definitely left memories at the table that I can't say about a lot of the other card games I have. So I think overall that's just a testament to the design and the funkiness and chaotic part that's there is definitely leaving people wanting more and wanting to come back to the game. And so I think that's the best way to put it, is that you're definitely going to have a good time or a terrible time, but a great memory. So.
Nice. Yeah, it's interesting because I think the game before this that you would have said was your favorite trick-taking game is also from Bezier with Cat in the Box. But yeah, I would say Zombie Princess is probably, I'm going to say it's probably my second favorite trick-taking game. I'm kind of scrolling through BGG just to make sure I'm not missing anything. I do love the new twist that puts on spades. And you and I have talked about this a lot over the years, not necessarily in the pod, but just together. Like, there's something about a game that draws me in and then pisses me off that I just love. Like, yeah. I don't know. Yeah, so I like that aspect. And I do like the way that it plays spades. And I like the way that, like you said, it does draw people back in. It makes people think about it. I think about it like when I'm like just thinking about the game night from before. I'm like, oh man, that yeah. So no,
it's weird though. I haven't said honestly. Like, it's been a while. I mean, we've talked about a lot of games. I mean, we review a lot of games. We play a lot of games. There have been games that have had that experience, but this is definitely the most recent one that has really had that level of effect on the group and myself. So yeah, very cool. It's been great. And the one I have is technically the Kickstarter version. I have like the little heavy coins and stuff. And so that's a nice little feature overall. Like, it comes with the nice chunky plastic skulls. No matter what copy you have, the card quality is great.
Yeah.
The only thing I don't like is that it doesn't fit in the box with card sleeves. It's a tight fit.
It's not good.
And that drives me absolutely up a wall. When you know a card game that's going to get played over and over and over again, they didn't package it so that it's meant to be sleeved.
Good.
That'll always be a frustration, no matter who it is or where. It happens all the time, and I understand that you're trying to fit it all in there. But the insert in this game is great, but it doesn't do anything when the cards are sleeved. So. Just keep that in mind. If that bothers you, I'm preparing you now. Yeah, just letting you know,
because
it's not gonna It fits in the box without box lift. So there's that. But the insert is irrelevant when it comes to card sleeved. So.
Oh, I was going to say with that. Oh, yes. Yeah, and if you are looking to get a good deal in this game, I was just looking at it. GameNerds.com looks like it has not released their pre-order yet. So you can still jump in on the deal, the pre-order deal. It's like $23.
Is that just...
That's the deluxe edition.
Oh, the deluxe? Okay.
I think that's a deal.
The deluxe is very good. Yeah, the deluxe is what you want. They updated a lot of the cards from whatever I got. I don't know what the base is, but like, yeah, the deluxe is what you want.
All right. Well, I think the game is very approachable from a family-friendly perspective.
Up to six players is great.
Yeah, I mean, six players is awesome. If you're looking for individual trick-taking, I would go elsewhere. But, yeah, so that's that. You got any other thoughts, buddy?
No, man. Very good game. Excellent work. Great design. And, yeah, it's been a lot of fun to play this one.
Sweet. All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for listening. If you have any feedback or want to give us your thoughts on the game, we would love to hear from you. Links to our socials are in the description. If you don't like socials, I get it. Check out our website, thegametablepodcast.com. Shoot us an email at thegametablepodcast@gmail.com or find us on BoardGameGeek. 5-star reviews, subscribing to your podcast player of choice, following us on socials, and joining the conversation on Discord. These heroic actions are immensely helpful in growing this podcast. Special thanks to Ashley McCaffrey for cover art, to Anna Snyder who made the intro and outro music, and to Alexi Chislin for the How to Play background music. Join us next week as we head over to the kids' table. In the meantime, may your dice rolls and your card draws be blessed, and your experiences at the table be ones to remember forever. Stay safe out there, princesses.